You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network's Quantum Leap Book Club. Our host, Parisha, is traveling, teaching this evening and not to be able to be with us, but she's asked me to step in and the co-hosts this evening. Geraldine Dalby Ball is an environmental biologist and from Sydney, Australia. Trina Cooper is a lifelong entrepreneur in Denver, Colorado. Rosemary Heyer, an English teacher, works with children in Frankfurt, Germany. Joyce Mollenhauer is a doctor of naturopathy and a registered nurse in Kingman, Arizona. Marianne Love is a clinical psychologist in Melbourne, Australia. And I'm up in Montreal, and I teach kids how to be civil engineers. So I'm going to get started. What I wanted to say was I had a couple of things. First of all, we're presently studying the book Mindfulness, a Practical Guide by Tessa Watt. And we're up to practically chapter 19. A couple of things that I wanted to just talk about before we jump into the book right away is that I'm finding this book had, when I started off with this book, I really didn't know what to expect because I thought, well, I know pretty much, I'm a pretty mindful guy. You know, I sort of am aware most of the time, and I thought I was doing pretty good. Since I've been reading this book, I've been finding out a lot of things about myself, and it's mostly that, hey, you can stop in the middle of the day and all of a sudden see the same thing that you've been seeing for the past 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, how many years you've been going past the same things. And all of a sudden, you notice new things about them. Or that's what's been my experience. I've been really noticing new stuff in amongst the old stuff. So this book has been really a mind blower for me because I really thought it was going to be kind of lame. And guess what? It's like, it keeps surprising me. It's also helping me realize when I'm in things and doing things, all of a sudden in my head, I get this voice that says, are you in the now? Are you listening to what you're doing? Are you feeling what you're doing? Are you really sensing what's happening? Are you in touch with what's going on? And it's like, I keep find myself more and more frequently bringing myself back to living like right in the moment. And I think that's really a cool way to be, and it's fun. And I, like I said, it's been giving me a whole lot more depth to my experiences. So without me going much longer into that, I thought maybe we could move on. Like I said, I think we're up to chapter 19, page 131 in the book. And if you don't have this book, get the book, because there's all these great exercises in this book, and we've been kind of going through them quickly, but I really would suggest that other people go back and look at some of these exercises and spend some time with them. But that being said, let's move forward, Marianne. How about you start us off on page 19 with me?
Sure, I'm happy to talk about me because it's all about me. So that's what this chapter is actually about. We often spend our time thinking about me, even as the first thing we do when we wake up in the morning. And that can honestly get in the way of happiness, because in this pursuit of me, we're often looking at like, what can make me happier? So I get that job I've been told to get, you know, if I can climb that corporate ladder, maybe then I'll be happy. Or I find that partner, or, you know, I find, you know, anything that I think will be good for me. And it's often actually what she's talking about here gets in the way of actually that true happiness that we could find if we simply stopped and came into awareness and came into connection And even like how we go about trying to protect that sense of me or that sense of I, in fact, gets us in the way of that connection and that awareness. And like you were talking about, Mike, just seeing new things and experiencing life in a new way. Because we're in that habitual habit of just trying to protect ourselves. So she's given us some really good exercises all the way through the book that I think address this invitation out of our own habitual thought patterns around I and me. And one of the ones she put in this chapter was actually going to sitting in any place that involves lots of people. And so it could be a cafe, a train, a waiting room, and just start watching people like you were a film director or a novelist. And, you know, look at them and try and use your imagination just to explore what kind of day are they having? What's going on in their minds? What kind of thoughts and emotions are they experiencing? And just paying attention to what you get immediately attracted to or interested in, you know, is it that sullen guy, that sour face that you can see walking past you? And just look at exploring what reasons might they be unhappy, you know, maybe they just lost their girlfriend or had a fight with someone. And this exercise can really help, like, get out of the sense of me or I and just start to explore other people. I have certainly done this practice before. Like I went to a massive shopping center and just sat in the food court and just watched people. I often do it, to be honest, because as a psychologist, I'm just really fascinated by people and watching people. So I often observe people and try and understand what's happening for them. And one of the things for me was developing my intuition and perceptive ability. I actually do that just to see, can I get a sense of what they're going through and what they're feeling? You know, and it's really fascinating. I mean, I don't get validation that what I'm feeling, what I'm picking up is true because I never ask them, but it is really interesting, you know, what you can feel emanating from people as they're walking past. Might be from the look on their face or it might be just a feeling that you get. And I think that really does help get out of the sense of me and just that fascination with me, you know, that we all have. And I think one of the practices I like to do with that is in the mornings, just going straight from getting up into meditation. And one of the meditations is just going into the nothingness. And that really helps get past that sense of even any sense of I, any story. And I really enjoy that. And the other thing I really enjoy in that early morning practice that I do is thinking about others and sending them love. And I just, like, you know, we have a list of people that get sent through that we send energy to and things. And I really enjoy that, just tuning in and sending other people love. And she talks about that in this, that it's one of the things that you can do to actually bring a deeper sense of fulfillment is actually think of others and, you know, wish them well. You know, and it actually makes us happier. And I feel for me that's just also being on purpose, and a purpose bigger than buying a house or bigger than a pay rise, you know, a purpose that is more heartfelt. And it definitely gets me out of a sense of me because you're just living it. You're just in the moment of it, and it's less about me and more about just having fun and doing what you love. So that's my thoughts on that chapter. I thought it was wonderful.
It's true. It's I've always loved sitting like in an outdoor cafe or something and just watching the people go by. And I don't think it's so important whether, like you say, you get validation or not, because the point is to get out of you and into them. So it doesn't matter whether you validate it or not. The fact is you're concentrating on somebody else. And I think that's a fun thing, and a lot of people seem to graduate towards that, you know, move towards that. They like to do that. People seem to like to watch other people. I don't know. So maybe there's a bit of that in everybody trying to get out of ourselves and connect to everybody else, which is a wonderful segue, actually, into the next section, which talks about society, and Geraldine's going to lead us on that section. Geraldine?
It absolutely is a perfect segue, because what it's actually saying is, and many of us may have experienced it as well, that as you feel that mindfulness coming in yourself, the next thing happens, the next thing that happens is that we naturally start to look outwards. We look outwards in our immediate environment. It might be once you've become more mindful, you've noticed clutter in your house and you feel like cleaning. I've heard that quite often from people, you know, as the mental state gets more in tune, then there's a desire to tidy up and bring order to the immediate surrounds. And then after that, it's the wider surrounds again of the, you know, the environment further afield. And it's the people. At first, it may be the people close by, the people in the household, then the people that one works with, and then it can be ideas for how do we bring the essence of mindfulness to the whole of society. And again, the more mindful somebody is, generally the more capacity they have to look even further. So it might be your own family, then your own workplace, then your own group, then it can be global. And to actually start looking at the questions of what does a society look like? What would it look like if it was mindful? And let's come back to that early saying again of, you know, mindfulness is really about being present and aware. So we're seeing things as they are. Well, from our own perspective, but like we've heard from the previous exercise that Marianne was sharing with us, we can also see that there are multiple perspectives, and the more we allow ourselves to be mindful and aware, the more we would be able to appreciate the multiple perspectives. And by going and watching people in a shopping center or wherever they may be, there can be a feeling of relating of a piece of yourself. That's what I find as well. When I do the meditation practice, it's like I've got a 3-second pause that allows instead of just reacting to something that I've read or something that's done, there is that moment of relating first. What perspective is that? So it allows that ability to see what mindfulness could be if we're all there. It's a less reactive, more aware. And it also shares how there's been some great progress in terms of bringing this into the lives of young people. She shares about some kindergarten students in Vancouver who've been taught to look at their brain, and I would highly recommend this. We have done this with our usual host, Parisha, in terms of having a look at the brain, the different parts of the brain, what they do, and it enables one to go, oh, okay, that reaction is that particular part triggering, but knowing that, I can now choose to either keep going on that path or choose a different response. So as it says in Tessa's shared, they draw pictures of their brain so that they know what's happening when they're going through those emotional reactions and stay in cause rather than being affected by them. She also talked about schoolboys in the UK, teens like 14, 15, and how they use mindfulness to help them through stressful study periods and sporting events. So really what it's saying is there's increasing mindfulness through our education, through teachers, doctors, lawyers, any walk of life, because while there are different, seemingly different needs, and we are all unique, the thing that mindfulness allows is, as it says, above all, to be present and to be aware, and then to be able to take that to the next point, to be present and aware in your environment, irrespective of what chaos is going on, to be present and aware when you're communicating with other people. And that's that big part about society.
Wow, that's so true. Everything you just said is like, wow, right on. It seems like when it starts with a kernel in you to become mindful, and it almost grows outward as your influence or your aura expands, you affect more people, and that just is viral. It's cool. It's very cool. Trina, how about talking to us a little about speaking and listening?
Absolutely. And I'm in a place right now that I just got back from a conference. Tonight, I'm in the middle of a fundraiser, finding a little quiet place to hang out. So the last week for me has totally been about speaking and listening. And it's amazing what you find out about people when you really, really do speak and listen. But what she talks about here in this book about speaking and listening is that we've been focusing a lot on creating more space for ourselves, like meditating, taking a little time out, doing different things, really working on us. But when we're in the middle of all of this busyness that goes on and different things that are happening, there's a way to do this yourself for speaking and listening. And we really need to look at ourselves and what do we do when we're in a crowd of people? Are we actually getting excited? Are we really listening to them? Are we thinking about what we want to say next? And if we're doing that, we're really not paying attention to what they're saying. So this was kind of a fun one this week for me, being where I am to be and doing what I did this last week was, you know, to actually sit and listen to what someone had to say and pause and then speak. And it was really interesting playing with this. So one of the things I talk about is that there's like this natural spaciousness and we kind of yearn for it. And at the same time, we're kind of addicted to some of the busy pieces too. So it's sort of like this little dichotomy in ourself that we're trying to figure out. And this is all about being in society and being with people. So we really need to pay attention to our relationships. And we need to be present in relationships. So there's three key pieces that she talks about in being present, being aware, and being mindful when you're in relationships with people. The first one is listening, which really means to sit still while someone's talking and really focus on what they're saying. Pay attention to it. There's going to be plenty of time for you to make your comments or answer back or whatever, but try it sometime when you're talking to someone. Can you literally focus on their words and hear what they're saying before you start thinking about how you want to respond? The other thing is speaking. And so sometimes people get so excited. I have someone in my life that does that. She gets all excited and then she talks faster and faster and she can hardly get a breath in and it's so hard to follow her. And so when you speak, think about what it is that you want to say and the pauses are okay. In fact, they can actually make what you're saying more important. You can learn how to, and if anybody's, you know, actually taken a speaking course, that pause can accentuate what you're saying. It can bring more energies to what you're speaking about. So watch for the pauses when you speak. Another piece that she talked about was silence. And are you one of those people that can't handle it if all of a sudden the conversation stops? So many times you're talking, and all of a sudden there's nothing, no one's saying anything. And when they do that, are you one that feels like you have to chatter? You just have to say something because that pause, that silence might be a little uncomfortable. So maybe next time, if you find yourself in that situation, maybe what you want to do is just say silent and see what happens. Because you'd be amazed the direction that things might go if you're not necessarily the one that's jumping in and leading them. So these are a couple of things that she talked about. And there was an exercise in here that she spoke of too, was to grab a partner and come up with a list of questions that both people could answer. So one person is the speaker and the other person is the listener. And you just ask the question and let that person speak for like 5 minutes without judgment. You just listen. You just sit and listen. No judgment, no comments, no nodding of your head, agreeing or disagreeing or whatever, but just listen to them. And then after the 5 minutes, let the other person ask you the same question and see if they can sit and really listen. And then after the 5 minutes, talk about what your experience is about. Because learning how to be a good listener and learning how to be a good speaker and paying attention and being aware, it's amazing what you will pick up as everyone, you know, is working with you. So I loved one little comment here too from Isaac about his experience. And it's just the very beginning of what he said, where he said, funny thing about mindfulness is that once you've had the taste of it, it's difficult to switch it off. And I really found this week, being in a crowd of society and practicing some of these things, I found it really intriguing, the different pieces that came up or the things that I heard people say, and how much more I learned just from being in that listening space. So that's the piece that I wanted to talk about tonight.
Well, that is so interesting. And it's almost like as you're talking and everything you're saying, I've got four different stories I could throw in to just support exactly what you're saying. It's like I'm biting my tongue just to keep from interrupting you, Trina, because it's so right on. Everything you said was like, yep, yep, yep. Mm-hmm. We're going to move on and then we'll come back and maybe we'll get a chance to throw some of those ideas around a little later. But right now I'd like to move on with Joyce, and we're going to talk about stillness, I think. Right, Joyce?
Yes. And this particular section is giving us a chance to look at the extremes of life that we have. Sometimes we think to sit in meditation by the ocean and just hear the water lapping up on the shore, having no one there to interrupt it, and just have this incredible peace and calm. Or other people know that they love being busy and they thrive on being busy. And in their mind, that's stillness, or it's not a contrary to stillness. It's a way of living. So I love the fact that our author almost gives us a strategy for life at the top of page 140, because what she tells us is we're not trying to get rid of all that busy, fulfilling life, and we're not craving, or we're not, maybe we're craving it, we're not wanting as our full outcome to always be in this quiet place with nothing happening. There's definitely a balance that we all in our hearts, I believe, know that we can achieve. So what she says is that we're definitely not denying our feelings. So they're not going away. In fact, we're looking at our feelings because our feelings are a guide. And a lot of what Trina was saying, when you're looking at, and what has already been spoken by all the speakers today, when we're observing others or ourselves, one of the strongest connections that we get is when we identify what are we feeling. So we're not running away from any of that. We're not wanting to be blown around and uprooted by every stress and casualty in our lives. And I love the word equanimity. I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it right, but it's a beautiful word. And Grandmother Parashaw, the host of our program, Quantum Leap Book Club, just demonstrates this so incredibly. It doesn't matter what is going on in her life. She is able to keep that calm and totally function, and shows us that this is possible for us. That, okay, maybe it's a bit of a teeter-totter, but we can balance it, and it is possible, and I think it's what we all want as our life strategy. So they do describe the quality of equanimity as a sense of inner balance or equilibrium, which I want. I'd like to live that way all the time, and I think there's a few others that might agree with me.
Thank you, Joyce. I'm sure you're right. Balance and equanimity sounds pretty good to me. We're going to move on right now, and maybe Rosemary will tell us how we can make that all happen through meditation.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she's coming up with a really interesting practice to have that in our life, and to have stillness, stability, and a sense of space, no matter what. But first, the author reminds us about that it's really mindfulness practice is not about getting us calm. And I thought it was a good reminder again, because I still catch myself trying to say, okay, I'm seeing my mind racing, I'm seeing this, I'm stressed, get calm. No, mindfulness is not about that. It's not about getting calm. She said the only calmness you actually get by allowing to be what is. And that means like you can even be stressed or nervous or whatever, just observing that and being mindful with what is. And I thought that was a good reminder again. She talked about that in the beginning of the book a lot too. So then she points out that nature is a good example of showing us how to have equanimity in middle of a storm, or how to stay calm with bad weather. You know, I mean, she's using a sample of the mountains, and she calls it actually the mountain praxis, where we're becoming the mountain. The mountain is actually in the middle of all kinds of weather and storms and seasons, and it stays calm. And she is offering a practice here. First, of course, we are centering ourselves and becoming aware with breath and body. And then we see a mountain in front of us, and we see its enormous size, its wideness. It just sits there. And then we embody it. And I can maybe speak from my own experience during the practice, and I just basically become that mountain. And first of all, I felt it was really important to just ground myself, you know, to just really feel like, here I am, I'm sitting. And I could actually feel that strength of the mountain. But then also she says, well, imagine now the challenges in your life or what happens to the mountain. There's wind, there's storm, there's rain, there's ice, there's all kinds of things. The sun hits the rocks and the flowers are blooming. The birds are flying around. There's animals. I felt the animals. I felt the forest sitting on the mountain. And still, there is this stillness. It's really like, right now I'm here. It was a sense of I'm feeling more like huge silence, huge strength, enormous balance inside of me, despite the rain or the storm. And it's important to implement that, she says, in our life. Like, I was thinking, I have done the practice, but it's not part of my daily routine. But I thought I'm going to put up a sign saying, be mountain, you know, just be mountain, and then get into that sense of stillness and of enormous strength, despite what is going on. So especially maybe for people who have a crazy morning routine with family, or if you are a teacher in the school and there's all this moving around. I've been teaching groups, you know, in the beginning, there's all this stuff going on. And you just could say to yourself, or have a little note or something, and say, be mountain. And I noticed that already makes a big difference. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. That's a good strategy. I think anything that stops you and just tells you to come back to now, ground yourself, and then kind of reset, I think is effective. At least in my experience, that's what I've been finding a lot of. I find myself very frequently catching myself, and not like bad, just going, okay, stop, back to now. And more we read the book and more we talk about this, I find more and more I'm catching those moments where I go, okay, back to now, you know. It reminds me of so many other things I you know, that I've looked at and talked about and come across in my life, you know, where people tell you, look at life as a game and see yourself as a player. Well, it's almost kind of the same thing. You're seeing yourself, what you're doing right now, right here. It's almost like you're watching yourself in the game. So I don't know if anybody else had any comments you'd like to make. I know, Trina, you were off on a wild run there with the talking and speaking and listening and stuff. And I thought that a good place to start off, maybe.
I'd be happy to say a little more, too, because in the experiences, you know, from listening just before that about it, being out in society and looking at the way everybody is handling mindfulness a little bit differently, I was quite surprised. my grandkids go to a school that starts their day with mindfulness, with belly breathing. And then there's another group that has incorporated mindfulness and quiet moments, or their philosophy, this isn't a business, is a 50-10. So you work for 50 minutes and you just focus on that. And then you take a 10-minute break. And this way you don't have to be bouncing back and forth between different things, and you can keep yourself centered. That was one of the things I got, was this multitasking. And instead of unitasking, people like to multitask, but it doesn't really work so well. So being at this conference, of course, we're bouncing back and forth between people. And I wanted to learn. And so being really present and listening, and what really shocked me was the more we started talking about mindfulness, or the more people talked about consciousness in this, and this is a scientific convention, the more came out. So like I said before, sometimes if you just listen, it's interesting to see the direction that someone's heading, and then you can just say something really simple. So this was it was fun to be able to play with this listening and speaking this week. With everyone, out in an environment where there's a lot of people doing a lot of talking and listening.
It always seemed that line always struck me as so right on when it said, you need to listen more than you talk. You need to listen without trying to be planning what you're going to say in response. And you need to be interested more than interesting. I think it's all saying the same thing. Rosemary, I know you had a comment you wanted to make.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that is really a challenge for me. And some of you who know me, that is a challenge for me to listen really well. And I really had a very nice experience with a good friend of mine who is an introvert, which means she's very quiet and she's really a good listener. And she shared a story about how she helped someone by just listening. And what I really got from that was, one of the things is that just listening is a very healing thing to do. I mean, I have done that when I practiced psychology and counseling, but in the all day life, I have a real hard time. And I've just decided that this is going to be one of my major practices. I'm having a plan of practices I'm now repeatedly using, which I feel like are good for me. And certainly listening without thinking and without thinking ahead, which I usually do. I run ahead and think ahead. And also I've been looking at, where did that come from, that I run ahead with my mind and I have something to say? And of course, it is a sense of self-importance, but also what does it mean when you want to always say something? What do you want to get from this? This is the question. And I certainly can answer that for myself. So listening without adding something, actually listening even with reflecting back what you heard, just this is this exercise Trina was talking about, that is really something which I feel very important, and is also a large healing quality for people. If we just sit down and listen to someone, and actually we have this flood, as you know, in Germany, and a volunteer who I know, we are in a group of volunteers helping them. And she shared that she was coming in there with all the bags and stuff and wanted to give that person something. And the person said, just sit down and have a cup of coffee to me. And then she talked. She needed just to talk and have someone to listen. So to bring that quality in my life, I want to do that more and implement that more.
Very cool. Very cool indeed. Geraldine, you're going to take us, I think, in a little bit different direction.
Yeah, definitely related, but different in as much as it's a reflection on last week and looking at, we were talking about multitasking then, and we're talking about incomplete cycles of action and how that can cause sort of some of the stresses. What are the things that can move us away from mindfulness? Because knowing that, it's about applying the opposite. So I really looked at the busyness as a feeling that I sometimes have, and I know that others get this at times too, because when we do surveys around business management, one of the things that comes up is, oh, there's lots of great ideas, but I'm too busy to implement it. And that word, too busy. So I, as we were talking about today, as I solve that in myself, it gives more ability for that to emanate out. So I was definitely looking at that as a current need. And in Australia here as well, there's a strange dichotomy of people whose purpose and work has been taken from them, particularly around Sydney, as we're in our, I don't know, fifth, seventh, eighth week of lockdown, where many people are not allowed to go to their places of work and they can work from home if they can, or there's limited ability to go out. And then others who are really busy. And from seeing both sides of that, I was able to appreciate that I do have projects that I can work on, and I do have a constant stream of things coming in. So even just that fact shifted things for me to say, wow, actually, it's really good. And then from that, to confront them and to see that sometimes there was a lot of mental space around carrying the projects. However, if I just actually did them, they weren't as big as I'd created them in my head. And that was a really important realization. Another part of that was to realize that the procrastination came when I had a block about something. I didn't know how to do it. I wasn't fully grasping what the project was. And that once I realized anything, I'm putting that project aside, it was because I didn't have the full data on it and go back and really understand it. Even though it seems like it's taking time to do these side things, those side things brought an understanding and I could move forward. So this week I've actually had times where instead of moving to the mindfulness practice and the first three quarters of it being listing things to do, the settling's been faster. It's still there, but the settling is faster, and I do attribute it to actually confronting those things and allowing them to be as small as they are rather than making them big in my thoughts. As I said, what you focus on, you grow. So let's focus on the beauty in the world and grow that.
Maybe you're creating a whole bunch of new neural nets with all of these practices too.
I do feel that, because each time you do it, it's like she says in the book, it's like having a little plant or a seed, and you just water it each day. You may not really notice a lot going on, and then there'll be a blossom or a new leaf or something that you didn't say, and on day six there's going to be a new leaf. Just keep watering and allow. And I thought that was a beautiful one for us to bring into this as well.
You bet. Joyce, I know you had a thought.
Get down muted here. To go back to the section on me, what really hit home for me was they're saying it's important to get out of yourself, but it's not just a momentary thing. You must stay out of yourself. And as Grandmother Parashaw has often said to me and others, get over yourself. So by doing that, by concentrating and recognizing the moments that I've lost myself in me in some way that's not assisting me at all, this just is kind of like a rule to have hanging over me. Why would I want to stay in myself? Because that is such a restricted, limited way to live. And I've experienced that, and I more than celebrate the many, many ways that this book has opened windows and doors of how to get way beyond that. It isn't a matter of you're losing yourself, you're actually finding yourself. And it's pretty exciting.
Very cool. You know, when we were talking about stillness earlier, it brought something to mind that kids are amazing. You know, Joyce, you were just talking about get over yourself. You want to get over yourself in a big hurry, hang around with some kids. You know, they'll get you over whatever you think you've got going in a big hurry. But I have a nephew, and he's really, really a special kid. And if you say to him, if you ask him a question, very, very frequently, he will say, "Let me think about that." And it's not just putting you off. He will actually come back to you maybe the next day, maybe a couple of days later, maybe in a few hours, and he'll have thought it through and he will give you his answer. It's just so cool to see. And it's like so unusual, but here's someone where he really does leave that stillness space so naturally. And it's so cool to see. And when I was reading this, I was thinking about him. So I don't know if anybody had any other thoughts they wanted to share at this point.
I did. This is Marianne from Melbourne, Australia. I just wanted to share something I've been doing lately with this practice. And I've just been going for walks, and on my way, I've been actually walking to work some days instead of driving. And I've just spent time looking at every plant in everybody's garden on the way and like saying hello to every single plant and seeing if I can see everybody, like make sure I see every plant. And it's been a really beautiful experience. It turns everything else off and all you see is this beautiful reflections, all with different little faces, you know, whether they're leaves or flowers or even the trees and things. And I swear, I don't feel like I'm making this up, but when I was walking past each of the plants, I could see them like almost go into this excited like shiver, like they were like excitedly sort of moving. Perhaps that's my projection anyway. Maybe I wanted to see that, but it felt really good to see that. And it felt like a lot of the plants were still around us. It doesn't feel like it was really windy or anything, but just felt like they were talking back, like just this beautiful connection that happened. And that was only because of this practice of actually stopping and looking and taking in the environment and talking to the plants.
You know, Marianne, I have absolutely no problem whatsoever believing you about the plants. Number one, I love plants and I do a lot of gardening and stuff, so I talk to my plants. But I had an exact similar experience one time. It was right before sunrise, and I happened to be down kind of in a hollow, and the sun was coming up over the hill, and there was this one tree that was up on the hill, and as the sun hit it, all the leaves just did this. Was so cool. So I have no problem at all believing that your flowers are talking to you. Any other thoughts on Joyce? You had another thought?
Well, I certainly agree about nature. I don't think we ever will lose. Well, in fact, there aren't words to say how much we'll gain by paying attention and connecting. But that's not what I was going to mention here. I wanted to just expand some more on connecting with other people. And I totally agree with how wonderful it is to just stop and sit somewhere and observe. But I'm in a car a fair bit. So what I have fun with doing is catching the expression on the driver's face if I happen to drive along beside them, and then just sending an energy out of the happiness that I am feeling at that moment or that I am working at feeling that moment. And when you invite a feeling of happiness, it's amazing how it actually comes. And if it doesn't come, what you do is you look in the mirror in your car and you smile at yourself. And that just automatically changes your energy. So it is wonderful to drive any distance and have that mission of thinking, I want to give a little happiness to everybody that's in these cars and just kind of ponder over what their day might be. You see them kind of jerking and changing positions on the road, and not too hard to recognize that they're either feeling like they're late or there's some reason that they're being abrupt. It just is such a big opportunity. So we don't have to look very hard to be able to connect.
Joyce, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a video on YouTube about, and it's these two people who get on a subway train, I believe it's in London, and it's a full train, and they just slowly start to laugh. And it's absolutely hilarious because little by little, everybody in the subway car starts to laugh to the point where they all get off at the end and it starts all over going back the other way. And it's just, it's a beautiful video. So it made me think of that with what you were saying about getting other people on the road to laugh. Trina, you had a thought?
Yeah, I'm kind of laughing at myself because I don't normally do this on my phone. So I'm like, how do I come off mute? yeah, a couple of thoughts. Actually, Joyce made me think of something too, but I had one thought before, you know, about listening and stuff and thinking about that game that people would play at parties or kids would play, the one about the secret, and everybody would sit in a circle and someone would tell somebody a secret. And then the next person, they'd go all the way around. And I'm thinking, by the time you get to the end, it's completely different than the way it first started out. And that, to me, is a good example about how people don't necessarily listen and really pay attention to what's going on. The other thing is, I'm actually borrowing someone's office here, and people keep walking in and out, and I'm like... The other thing that kept coming up as I was reading these couple sections that we covered tonight was, you know, how can we take this out? How do we bring it out into society? And what can we do? And Joyce just gave an awesome example about, you know, making people smile and things. But, you know, even going up to people and saying just something nice, you know, that all of a sudden it brings their energy up and makes them notice something, or you ask them a question and then you really sit and listen. So while a lot of this is about us becoming mindful, there's also that piece about how do we share what we gain with all these other people? And that's why I think it's really important. Like this book, Mindfulness from Tessa Watt, this is such a practical guide, and I really do hope that people share it, that they spend their time going through practicing exercises. And then when you get something, share it with people. Because I think if we really want to change the world, we need to do it. You know, each one of us needs to pick up what we need to do. So I'm just grateful this book came into my life too. It's been wonderful.
Thanks, Trina. I have to say, there was a part in the section on me, and I think, Marianne, you talked about me at the beginning, right? There's a section there where he says, we often isolate ourselves from others and cut ourselves off from our own experience to defend our image of me. And I thought that was so powerful because that's almost like an explanation for what's happening in the world right now. I'm not going to generalize. Many people are so concerned about defending what they think, they're not really open-minded enough to actually hear what's being said by everybody else around them. And I'm saying that regardless of what side you're on. I think everybody, the whole world could use a little mindfulness in listening right now, simply because I don't really think we hear each other. And this hit me very strongly. It's so important sometimes to protect that image that we have of ourselves that we're not even open to hearing, oh, why am I like this, or even analyzing it. So this takes some guts and it takes some work to do this. We maybe make it sound a little bit like these exercises or you can just breeze through them real easily. Tessa has made them very easy and she's made them the explanations very simple. But if you really want to get into it and do some good to yourself and some deep work, it takes some willingness to get over whatever you think you are. And so I don't know if anybody else had any reactions when you read that. It's a thought that hit me when I was reading it. Any thoughts, anybody?
Yeah, this is Marianne from Melbourne, Australia again. Yeah, I certainly agree, Mike, that it's a brave path to sit in full awareness and allow the mindfulness through. Even sitting and allowing feelings to come up can be a real challenge if we're defending our identity by saying, oh, we're always on top of things, like we get there fast, we get it done the best, you know, we're the smartest. And then if you sit in feelings, then you actually might explore the fact that maybe there's a part of you that doesn't believe that. Maybe there's some insecurity there that stems back a long way. And I think often to sit in mindfulness is firstly sitting in the mindfulness of what's stored in your own bodies and just allowing space for that without even taking that too personally.
and not even over-identifying with that as anything. And that's one of the things I enjoy about the mindful practice, is just being able to sit and allow, with curiosity, almost allow feelings to come up and then allow that to keep showing you and keep showing you and keep showing you until you see at the bottom of that is something on an unconscious level you've been believing that wasn't ever even true. And the mind starts to unravel itself. And I think in that you get less protective of needing to hear something a certain way from someone else, or needing to defend a position either way, whether it's personal, political, or, you know, you can actually allow room for it all, because none of it's that personal. And I think this mindfulness practice, particularly around thoughts and emotions, allows for that room to not take it personally.
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is I love when I first read that in this book, that it was okay to be good, bad, whatever. The whole idea was not to judge yourself, just to be an observance of what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're realizing, and not to judge it. I thought that was the coolest part when I started to read this. That made it almost like, okay, this is easier. This is easier to do. I don't have to have any judgment. I can just sit back and kind of watch it. That was good. But then I think what then happens is you have to cross a point where you're willing to say, okay, what does all that mean? And be willing to say, maybe there's some things I got to change here. And that's kind of what I was going for. Rosemary?
Yeah, this is Rosemary from Germany. And I'd like to add to this part, someone shared about the importance to connect with people. And at the end of the chapter 20, she talks about this idea that once you do mindfulness, I think Marion touched it a little bit, once you do mindfulness, you can't stop anymore. You know what you're doing, even if you don't do it, so to speak. Like if you have an argument, in the middle of the argument, you know, oh my God, I am not mindful here right now. I'm not present. And she also says, you have the possibility now, how she calls it, to switch on or switch off, to connect with strangers, to connect with people. Now you know. And that we have the tendency, as you said, Mike, you know, to withdraw and be ourselves only and look at ourselves. But you now know that you can switch on to connect with people. And I think that is so important right now in this situation where we are on the planet. We do need to reach out to our neighbors, because everybody, if we watch TV, who was the one who was helping? It was your neighbor who was helping you when the water came in, the floods came in, or when the fire burned. It was your neighbors who got together and organized things and got you out of the house and so on. So I think it is really important to switch on to listen to neighbors, and that's what I'm planning to do, to really reach out to my neighbors, to talk to them and to make a comment, to compliment them and to listen and to make connections. And this is what she's recommending, to speak and a pause and to listen is a way to do that. And so I encourage everybody to practice that and connect with your neighbors.
Joyce, you had a thought about something like something?
Pretty much what Marianne was talking about, but I just like to put my own 2 cents worth to it. If I could say the greatest things that I've got out of this book, touches on what Mike shared a little bit ago, that we're to allow ourselves, we're not judging ourselves, we're not trying to say we're right or we're wrong, we're letting ourselves be and looking at ourselves without having to have a judgment. So a lot of what is spoken of here is the ability to listen to others and to get a sense of what they're feeling. And Marianne covered this, but I'll just put it in my own words. To actually get in touch with what I am feeling is one of the things that I think is a key throughout this whole book. Because if I don't know what I am feeling, then the way I'm going to connect might not be an open door to connect, whether it's nature or whether it's another person or whether it's material, getting out my home in order, whatever it is. If I haven't identified how I'm feeling as the first step, then it might not move just as quickly as I'd like it to or smoothly. So that was just my thought.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Anybody else have any thoughts about that? Geraldine? No? I thought you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do. Sorry. It's just that the mute was a little bit slow. Yes. I was going through lots of internal nodding in the last, the sharings. I've had the absolute delight to have like 4 days off work, and I went on a yacht to a place within 10 kilometers because that's within our zone. And it was just a magnificent place in a national park with a waterfall, with rainbows, with all sorts of things. But it allowed a restart. And as part of that, I was thinking of this book and saying, wow, what I'm doing here, being quiet, observing, restarting, being gentle with myself, with whatever comes up about what I think was labeled this or that. This is actually what it's about. This is actually, I know we talk about doingness and beingness, but to be there and to be, work out what my beingness is while I'm there. The book, every chapter in the book had something that said, yeah, you feel good now because this is real. And it also allowed me to have more appreciation for the First Peoples of this country and so many that had that awareness of all the things we're talking about, of everything being alive, everything being in communication, of our internal thoughts manifesting on the outside. So really from that moment, I'm going back to the book and back to page one with this new self, this restart, still myself, but a restart, and doing the exercises again. And that's in progress now, and it's quite illuminating. And I think what's happened is dropping a couple of the onion layers of the judgment around things. So that's been quite powerful, and the book has absolutely been instrumental in that, and the place, having a restart place.
Very cool. Very cool. Sounds like a neat place.
Beautiful.
One of the things that happened here, you're talking a little bit about being under quarantine or restrictions or whatever. Last summer, it was the same thing here, to pretty much the same degree. And one of the things that we did was to walk around and specifically say hello to people as we passed them, because people got into this quarantine mindset where there was like they were almost afraid to look at each other. And so Claire and I went around and purposely said hello to people on the other side of the street even. And people just, it was like, wow, they just came out of it. And it was fun to watch people come out of the funk. But I also have to admit that it's been a really wonderful evening sharing with everybody. And I'm going to see if anybody has any last words that you'd like to say before we close off the show. Is there any last thoughts on what we've been talking about tonight?
I have a quote on my shield here, and I would like to read it to you because I think it's really summarizing what the book is about, maybe. And it says, stop measuring days by degree of productivity and start experiencing them by degree of presence. I'd like to share that.
Beautiful. Well, okay, so it's that time to conclude our studies, and we want to thank you for sharing your time and your energy with us. You matter and you count, so you always make a difference. We look forward to you being with us next week as we make that leap to greater consciousness. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine, and always all good things to you.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.
You're listening to the